to another episode of the Read Option Podcast. As always, I have the full band back together on a normal Tuesday show. How's everything going, Brentley? I'll start with you, man. How's everything going with you?
It's going good. You know, had a rough day Saturday with the Ducks taking an L. But other than that, it was a good another good weekend of football. Had some really good games yesterday on the NFL front. On Monday, I saw the Chargers get a really good win against a Raiders football team that I think is has turned the corner, in my opinion. I think they're the real deal football team. So overall, good weekend, man. How are you?
I'm good, man. Can't complain at all. Whenever I'm around football, I'm always good. You guys know that. But, Dre, how's everything going with you, man?
Great, man. Things are going well. Glad to be back. And, ready to get this pod popping.
Absolutely. So just to give you guys a quick show notes or show rundown, I should say, a lot of topics to discuss. We'll quickly go over the Raiders and then also the Chargers game, some of our biggest takeaways. We'll give out our game balls or some prospects that stood out to us, and then we'll go through the big three of the games that we talked about on last Friday's show with Brentley and myself, and we'll do a quick recap of all of those, which were Georgia, Arkansas, Alabama, Ole Miss, and then also Cincinnati and Notre Dame. And then we'll finish up today's show with our biggest takeaways from week four of the NFL action, which was very interesting, to say the least. So starting at the top with the Raiders and the Chargers end up getting the victory 28-14. The Raiders suffered their first defeat of the year, and the Chargers really dominated the game, in my opinion. The first half, I mean, what it was, 21-0. And then the Raiders storm back. They go 14 unanswered points, and then the Chargers go down and get a big score. But my biggest takeaway is Justin Herbert's the real deal, man. Like, I did not expect him to be this good right away. But when I tweeted about this last night, of how quarterback evaluations are really, really hard. And then in that offense, the offensive coordinator's name is escaping me from Oregon that they let go last year. He did Herbert such a disservice, man. You know, East and West offense, a bunch of side-to-side movements, perimeter screens, and that just wasn't Herbert's game. And it kind of was a negative fault for his evaluation and really made things hard. But looking back on it, and it's kind of revisionist history with this, but just seeing him play at the Senior Bowl and just how well he did there, that kind of could give you a telltale of what he could be on the next level. And that's not to say, you know, the sample size at the Senior Bowl should outweigh what we saw in his career, but just being in a different type of system and how clean his evaluation was at the Senior Bowl, that kind of should have gave us a little bit of an indicator of what he could be on the next level. And I think a lot of people got too wrapped up in the personality of how he's just laid back and, you know, quiet and things like that. And, you know, a lot of people get kind of caught up in that personality thing with the quarterbacks. You don't have to be a rah-rah guy in order to be a leader in the locker room. He's kind of more of a lead by example type of guy, which is fine. It just depends on, you know, the locker room that you're in, and there's whatever floats your boat as a team. Some teams or some evaluators don't really believe in that lead by example type of player. But Herbert definitely is a case of where you kind of have to reevaluate yourself, and then it helps you learn from quarterback evaluations too. So Justin Herbert is my biggest takeaway from this game, and he's really starting to, you know, enter that top 10 type of player at the position, in my opinion. I think he's that good right now. So, Dre, I'm going to come to you first. What were your biggest takeaways from this Raiders-Chargers matchup?
A few of the things, man, that I took away from it, man, was that the Chargers, man, like, they can certainly stand to improve their pass rush, man. I think that that they need to find some way to generate some pressure on the opposing quarterback. And of course, Justin Herbert played well, man. I mean, and I think that the Las Vegas has surprised a few people, man. I mean, in a way that they played to start the season, and they definitely look very explosive on offense as well. So those were a few of the takeaways that I took from the game.
For sure. Brentley, what about you?
Yeah, a couple things. I think obviously you can start with the quarterback, Justin Herbert. He was another really good game, 25 of 38, 222 yards, three touchdowns, no picks. Was just really dialed in through accurate passes. He showed off his strong arm. But I just thought he made really good decisions, and he was excellent on third and even on fourth down. You see Staley trusting him in my opinion, risky situations. I think the ball's on their own 40-yard line. They're up a score, not even two scores yet, up one score, and you're going to keep the ball in your quarterback's hands, and Herbert delivers with a strike to Jared Cook for the first down, keep the chains moving. It's things like that. The Cal Staley's has been staying aggressive in those key moments, those pivotal moments of the football game that Anthony Lynn just simply didn't do last year, and I think it's really paying off for this Chargers football team, which has been known to lose a ton of close games. I think the Raiders' offensive line really struggled tonight, in my opinion. Derek Carr was sacked. I think he was sacked four times today. I feel like he never had a chance to really set his feet and really look comfortable in the pocket. A lot of the plays he did make were him scrambling and kind of chucking it down to Henry Ruggs, who has just been phenomenal this year, by the way. I know he kind of got crapped on last year as a rookie when all the other rookie receivers seemed to be outproducing Ruggs. And obviously Ruggs was the first one drafted, but I think he's really coming to his own, which has been great for the Raider offense. But I think ultimately it just comes back to just this Brandon Staley. He has this Charger team playing well. Herbert is looking like, to me, easily a top 10 quarterback. I think the better conversation is he top five. I think that's what we got to talk about at this point in time, just the way how he's playing at this moment. But I think these are two potential playoff teams. I think both these teams will be competing for the wild card spot. I do think the Chiefs win this division, but I think both teams are heading in the right direction. It was a really good Monday Night Football game.
Yeah, it was. And, you know, Staley's really impressive. I've been impressed with him so far as a head coach, being a first-time head coach, just how aggressive he has been. And I'm not sure if you guys watched the Chiefs game or not, but him going forward on fourth down essentially won them that game. And I've been really impressed with him. You know, a lot of people had a lot of great things to say about him as far as when he was the DC with the Rams and how much high praise he got there. And there were some question marks of if it would translate to the Chargers, but it definitely has. And I love seeing teams kind of bring in that new face or new guy, in the sense that everybody kind of criticized the hire just because it wasn't the popular hire. Everybody thought he was a little bit too young and not ready. He wasn't going to have strong coordinators, didn't know a lot of people around the league as far as how to build a staff or knowing how to build a strong staff. But he's completely debunked all of that stuff. So I love when teams go with the fresh new ideas and taking a risk with these head coaching hires and going off on the limb. But before we move on, I want to remind everybody, and I wanted to tell you guys about our new sponsor over at Homefield. Homefield, a premium collegiate apparel brand out of Indianapolis. They have incredibly comfortable and officially licensed apparel with vintage college designs. One of the coolest things is that Homefield studies school history and goes through the archives. They create thoughtful vintage designs that represent the school's history. They're actually wrapping up their big new Saturday season 2. They launch 6 new schools each Saturday. All summer, a new school gets released every Saturday, but they are going to continue to release and refresh schools all year long. They actually have over 100 schools officially licensed and adding more all the time. Listen, I'm trying to get some North Carolina Central gear so that I can represent my alma mater everywhere I go. Hopefully, they get that up very soon. But I did have some Clemson gear on the way to represent number 1 overall pick and the newest quarterback of the Jacksonville Jaguars and Trevor Lawrence, so I can't wait to show that off on the next show. You yourself can get involved. You can get 15% off of your first purchase from Homefield by using the code TDN during checkout. Head over to the website, which is homefieldapparel.com. Check out all of the schools they have. They add schools all the time. And when you put in the code TDN during checkout for your first purchase, you will receive 15% off over at homefieldapparel.com. Again, that's code TDN at homefieldapparel.com. All right, so the next thing that we want to discuss is game balls for the week. We had the week 5 college football action all over the country, and what a week it was. We'll talk about some performances later on when we go through our recaps, but some players that caught your eye. And Brentley, I'm going to come back to you. Who were a couple of players that caught your eye that you give your game ball to this week?
Yeah, so I'm going to stay with the Georgia and Arkansas game. That was one of the games of the week. So I think they were number 2 versus number 8 in the country. But how about linebacker N'Kobe Dean? You know, he's been really strong this season. I thought on Saturday he was everywhere. He had 4 tackles. He had 1.5 sacks, 2 tackles for loss. I think he's really the heart and soul of this Georgia defense. You see him playing middle linebacker. He runs sideline to sideline. He blitzes the quarterback. He's excellent in coverage. I don't think he has like the best physical traits in the world. He's a little undersized, but you can tell the heart he plays with. I think his energy is contagious. The passion for the game is really just outstanding. I love what this kid stands for, and I thought he was everywhere on Saturday. So I'm giving my game ball to Nakobe Dean, who, by the way, he may not be the best athlete, but he has certainly helped himself, in my opinion, for this upcoming draft.
I could talk about this Georgia defense all podcast long, just because those dudes are so much fun to watch on tape. And, you know, I'll continue to trend with the Georgia defense. And the player that I'm giving my game ball to is defensive tackle Devontae Wyatt. And we talk about Jordan Davis and Adam Anderson and some of the other players along this defensive line. Devontae Wyatt has been the player that's been the most consistent among the group. He had 1.5 sacks and then also a tackle and a half, tackles for loss in this game too. And then the Arkansas offense just was not able to do anything in this game at all. And, you know, big number 95 was just flying all over the field. So Devontae Wyatt would definitely be the person that I give my first game ball to. But Dre, I'm going to come to you now. Who's a player that really caught your eye this weekend?
A few of them. I'm going to stay out west with mine. The first player that stood out to me was Jaden Daniels. He finally started playing like the player we know he can be. ASU upset Oregon, the number 20 ranked team in the country. Jaden played exceptionally well. He was 13 for 18 for 286 yards and 2 touchdowns, and he helped ASU secure the lead in the Pac-12 South. I mean, so my first game ball goes to Jaden Daniels.
Yeah, and, you know, Jaden, he's been a difficult projection just because of the inconsistencies that he's been battling ever since his career has started. But his build looks a little bit bigger, looks a little bit thicker, and the coaches have been saying he's hovering around 200 pounds. He's throwing the ball a little bit better this year, and I really like how he played last week. So I'm glad that you mentioned him. But I'm going to stay for my second game ball. I'm going to stay on the quarterback train. I'm going to go with Pitt quarterback Kenny Pickett. And, you know, just watching Pickett last year, you saw the talent was there. And, you know, he's not a uber talented as far as arm strength and things of that nature as far as the actual qualities on the field. But he looks much better this year. And he finished 23 of 36, 389 yards and 4 touchdowns against Georgia Tech. They get the 52-21 victory. And he actually broke Dan Marino's record over a 3-game period of where he threw 14 touchdowns. Marino set the record in like 1981, I think it was. He had like 13. So Pickett's tossing the ball all over the field right now. And he's one of those quarterbacks that, you know, you see him at an all-star game and you can see a team taking him in like the third round or something like that, falling in love with him. So I like Pickett. I like what he's been able to do this year for sure. But Brentley, I'm going to come to you. Who are you giving your second game ball to?
Yeah, my second game ball is another player that was my red dot prospect from Friday's show, and that's defensive end for Cincinnati Bearcats, Myjai Sanders. On the Friday show, I said, you know, he hasn't really done much in 2021. He had a really good year last year, debated coming out and declaring for the NFL draft, which many of us, and me including, were surprised that he returned. You know, I thought he could have been easily a second-round pick, maybe even a late first-round pick, but opted to return to Cincinnati. And again, he hasn't been producing at the level we thought he should be. And what better week than, you know, going against Notre Dame, a top five team, top 10 team, to really show out. And he did just that. He had 3 tackles, 1 tackle for loss, 2 quarterback hits. And one of those hits was directly correlated into an interception. So I thought he was everywhere, really disruptive. I love his length. I love the explosiveness, the bend, the ability to finish at the quarterback. I thought he had a great game, and he really helped himself because, again, like outside of Thibodeau and Aiden Hutchinson, there's a lot of room for these edge prospects, whether that's, you know, Drake Jackson, who we know had a good game, or that's Adam Anderson. Like, there's room to really raise up the boards, and I think Myjai Sanders really helped himself.
If the draft were next week, where do you see Sanders going?
I got him in the first round. I really do. I think he's going to test out. He's going to test really well. And then again, I do think his tape from last year to me was first round worthy. I just needed to see a bigger sample size. And if he continues to play like how he did on Saturday, I have a hard time seeing him not in the first round.
I'm with you. And projections are kind of all over the place about him right now. But with his size, his length, and his speed, there's no way he gets outside of the top 40, even if he doesn't go in the first round, or his top 50, I should say. And I think what Azeez Ojulari went like 42 or 43, and that was with an injury too. So, you know, he's kind of – he's not similar to Azeez, but just talking about the potential and the length and the speed and explosiveness that they both have, I think that's similar too. So, Dre, I'm going to come to you. Who are you giving your next game ball to?
My next game ball goes to Drake Jackson, man. Drake made an appearance against Colorado this past Saturday. He recorded two sacks. There are a ton of peaks and valleys with Drake Jackson, but I need to see more consistency and maybe more production against better competition for him. He's had two sacks against Arizona in 2020. He just had two sacks against Colorado, who is now 1-4, and he had a sack against Washington State, who is 2-3. I mean, like, you certainly like the potential, but I definitely would like to see more consistency instead of splash plays against lesser competition.
And I think you're spot on with that, and it's something that we talked about during our summer scouting when we were bringing him up too, of where he just lines up in that wide nine and he just out athletes everybody. But you want to see him whenever they play in those big time games not really disappear as much as he does. You want to see him have some high quality sacks in those big time games. And you know, my last ball game ball is going to go to Aiden Hutchinson. Did y'all see what he did against Wisconsin?
Guy's that a monster.
That dude is unbelievable. He's playing at an unbelievably high level this year, man. Like, he's been unstoppable. And I didn't see this coming like this. I didn't think he was going to come back from the injury like this. But I don't even see how he makes it out of, like, the top 10 to 15 if he tests as well as everybody's going to think he's going to test. And then he's going to have the production to back it up too. He doesn't look like – looking at him on tape, I would never guess that he's 6'6". I would never have guessed that. But he's a big dude. Now, he's not super thick, but vertically, he has it there, and he has like those broad shoulders that you can see him adding 10 to 15 pounds easily. But the motor that he plays with and just everything that he does with his hands already, what he already has in his bag, is just very impressive too. So I think he has the game that translates really, really well. So Aiden Hutchinson gets my last game ball of this week. What he was able to do against Wisconsin really, really stood out. And, you know, there's going to probably be some teams that prefer him over Kayvon Thibodeau. And I'm not saying he's going to end up being the better player, but as far as the polish walking through the door and the immediate impact that he can have on the next level, I wouldn't be surprised if some team prefer him over Kayvon Thibodeau just because of the polish that he has walking through the door and how much he can help you right away. Now, that's not to say he has more upside than Thibodeau. I'm not saying that. But as far as how he can contribute right away immediately, plus the polish that he does have, I think there's a debate to be had as far as what Aiden Hutchinson has been able to show this year. Did you guys have anything else that you wanted to add as far as game balls or players that you wanted to shout out?
I had a couple more just real quick. I think Evan Neal, he was, I mean, dominant. It was insane what he was able to do, the power he showed, just the push and movement he was able to generate on the line of scrimmage in the run game. And he was outstanding in the pass game. I think there's no longer a question who's offensive tackle one. I mean, now we're getting to the point where is he the number one pick in the draft? I mean, that's really where this is heading, in my opinion. He's been that dominant this season to me. And then lastly, I got a guy who's not eligible, but did you guys see Bijan Robinson's stat line this week? My gosh. I mean, I wish Texas was good so he can win the Heisman. Like, I have so much love for Bijan Robinson. I know we talked about this guy over summer, and he is nothing short of sensational. I cannot wait for the 2023 drafts to talk about this kid more because he is unbelievable.
Yeah, that 2023 running back class is going to be – special, very, very special. You guys know how I feel about Jahmyr Gibbs at Georgia Tech, who's putting together a good season already too, and there's plenty of others that we can't wait to talk about too. But Dre, I think you had a couple of guys that you wanted to add before we move on to our next topic.
Yeah, to be brief, man, my last guy, man, it's hard not to acknowledge what Drake London is doing at USC, man. He's put up eye-popping numbers in that offense. I mean, he leads the nation in receiving yards this past this past game, he had 9 catches for 130 yards. But he's been putting up stats against every team in the pack, man. And he's been playing exceptionally well, to say the least. I mean, so definitely have to show Drake London some love.
Let me ask you this, Dre, just because I haven't watched London in depth. I did watch him last week. But that style of receiver, does it scare you a little bit as far as the one that wins above the rim? I think he is explosive, but as far as that type of way, or the ways that he does win, that box out, jump up and go get it type of wide receiver, does that scare you on the next level as far as his ability to consistently separate on the next level?
There are definitely some questions, and I know we talked about that some during the summertime, but I think this sometimes evaluators get caught up in focusing on what a player can do instead of highlighting the things that he can do, right? And I'm sure that there'll be an offensive coordinator who will figure out a way to put him in advantageous situations where he can win and do what he does best, man, because he's extremely athletic and long, he can run, and he's got great hands. Great hand-eye coordination, man. I mean, so he brings a lot of positives to the equation. I'm sure that there'll be an office coordinator who will find a way to put him in a situation where you can highlight the things that he does exceptionally well.
Love it. All right, before we move on, I want to remind everybody about BetOnline. We're back and better than ever. All eyes are on the gridiron as teams are back on for another football season. As always, BetOnline is your number one spot for all of the pro and college football action this season. With a new and updated site and interface, even more odds, props, and contests, BetOnline continues to be the number one source for everything football. Head to the website or use your mobile device to sign up today to receive your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. Don't forget to use your promo code BLEAV, that's BLEAV, to receive your bonus from football, basketball, boxing, right to your favorite Vegas casino games. Don't wait to take advantage of all the amazing offers available for the 2021 season. BetOnline is the fastest and easiest way to bet all your favorite sports. BetOnline, where the game starts. All right, let's recap some of these games from college football week 5. And I want to start with Georgia and Arkansas, just because this was a complete domination by the Bulldogs defense and then also the Bulldogs offense too. And this is the type of win that Kirby Smart loves to have. A ground and pound game combined with just playing dominating and attacking defense. They get the win 37-0 over Arkansas. And this game was really hyped up. Myself and Brentley, we were really hyped about watching this game. We thought 18.5 points to give Arkansas was a bit egregious. And we thought Arkansas was going to be a little bit more competitive than what they were. But Georgia's defense is on an all-time great path. And I don't know if y'all watched them against Vanderbilt. Vanderbilt could not get past the 50-yard line on them. And then Arkansas just could not string together plays consistently against them. And, you know, we're talking about a defense that probably has every starter that's going to end up being drafted from top to bottom, whether that's not this year, maybe even next year combined. But There's so many good players on this defense, man. Like, this is a professional defense already. Like, I would be fine with lining up with some of these dudes on Sunday right now. But, Dre, I'm going to come back to you first. You are the area scout for Georgia. So, just what are some things that you saw in this game or maybe some players that caught your eye in this one too?
I think the thing generally that stood out the most, man, is that Georgia's defense continues to impress. I mean, like, they play a style of football that will serve them well late in the season when everyone's banged up and hurt. They're able to run the football and play good defense, and it takes the pressure off of not having a healthy JT Daniels there. I mean, so I tell you what, man, I mean, when they play against Alabama, there'll be fireworks, man. I can't wait to see it. But again, like, they have probably the most talented defense other than Alabama in the nation. So can't wait to see those two match up against each other.
We were talking about that a little bit pre-show before you got on, Dre, of how who's going to win that game is going to be really interesting, just because I don't think Georgia can trot Stetson Bennett out there and win that game, just because they're going to have to score to beat Alabama. It's not going to be like Clemson where they won like, what, 10-3 or 10-6 or something like that. Alabama's going to score no matter who's playing on defense. They're going to figure out a way to score. And then I know this defense is really good for Georgia, but Bill O'Brien's going to find a way to scheme some things around it, and they're going to put some points on the board. I'm not saying they're going to put 35 or 42, but they're going to figure out a way to score on this Georgia defense. So Georgia's going to have to figure out their quarterback situation. But staying on topic with this Georgia and Arkansas game, getting a little bit ahead of myself, talking about that Georgia-Alabama matchup that I can't wait to see. So, Brindley, I'm going to come to you. What were some of your biggest takeaways from this one?
Yeah, I mean, obviously the Georgia defense was phenomenal. Shutting Arkansas out, who Arkansas really had an explosive offense heading into this game. Treylon Burks held to only three receptions. Shout out to Darian Kendricks, who was phenomenal, I thought, on Saturday. But to me, my biggest takeaway was this running game. I mean, you look at the stats right now, they had four players with 10-plus carries. I think they ran for over 273 yards. You have 300 monster in James Cook, Zamir White, and Kendall Milne, who all three could probably be playing on Sundays. It's a fun football team to watch. But I do have some questions, Jordan, as you mentioned, where this recipe for success is working. But come playoff time, come SEC championship time, when they're not given the luxury to not be in obvious, you know, passing situations, how do they respond? You know, Stetson Bennett, is he going to be able to make the throws on 3rd and 7? I don't know. You know, JT Daniels, is he going to be back healthy? You know, how's he going to look? It remains to be seen. But overall, you can't not be impressed with the job Kirby Smart's doing. Jordan, credit to you. I know you did tell us in the summer that if there was ever going to be a year where Georgia can upset Bama, it was going to be this year. And I think that holds really true. Obviously, as we say today, they're clearly the second or first best team in the country. And they probably won't be tested until the SEC championship game against Alabama.
If Kirby doesn't do it this year, it's not going to happen, man. It's not going to happen. If Saban doesn't lose to his former assistants, I think he's like, what, 24-0 now that he beat Lane Kiffin. So that's a great segue to our next game with Alabama and Ole Miss. Alabama gets the win 42-21. And the subject of this game coming into it anyway was Matt Corral, who was up and down in this one. Didn't really have a bunch of high moments. It kind of was a steady Eddie performance overall. I thought it was very average, but, you know, Alabama's defense played much better in this game than they have in previous weeks. I know there were some things exploited against Florida that had people kind of down on them, but the thing that I'm most impressed with in this game is the quarterback, obviously. Bryce Young is so poised, man. And, you know, that's a credit to him playing so many big games, being a Cali kid. He's used to playing in these big games during his high school career, and he's just not fazed by anything. And the other takeaway was Evan Neal in this one and just how dominant he was throughout it. So, Brindley, I'm going to bounce back to you. And just what were some of your biggest takeaways from this one?
To me, it's just how good Bama is on both sides of the ball in the line of scrimmage. I mean, it is outstanding. That Will Anderson played really, really good. He's a sophomore, I think, number 31. He was phenomenal. Henry Do'o was everywhere on Saturday. And I thought Christian Harris played really well as well. But again, I thought Ole Miss, they were just manhandled on both sides of the line of scrimmage. The Bama offensive line just generated so much movement led by Evan Neal. They were able to run for, I think, what was it, 210 yards on the ground. The defense was phenomenal. Matt Corral, to me, he showed some moxie. He saw him make a couple big throws. You saw him score on the ground with using his legs. He was able to scramble. I don't think this game necessarily hurt his stock by any means. It definitely didn't help it. You know, I mean, he ran into a buzzsaw against Bama. He did what he can do, but I just think Bama is just so much better than Ole Miss as a football team that we were really just caught up in like the Matt Corral showcase game. We didn't really come to think, well, hold up, like the talent differential is pretty substantial. And I think we saw that today. We saw that on Sunday or Saturday.
I think we kind of got suckered into what happened last year with them pretty much hanging in the game with Alabama all the way up until the fourth quarter. I think it ended up being like 63-48. That was the score from last year's game. So everybody was saying, oh, Ole Miss is better this year. But Alabama, I think defensively they're much better than what they were last year, especially on the second level. Henry Tolotolo has been a godsend for them. He's so much better than what Dylan Moses was in the middle as far as reading stuff and just being a leader consistently there. But, Dre, I'm going to come to you. What were some of your biggest takeaways from this one?
Yeah, I think it's all been said, essentially. I think the one thing that I would like to add, though, is that as far as the Matt Corral goes, I thought that in a game where he'd be playing against a team that most resembles an NFL team, that he did nothing to hurt his legitimacy to be in the conversation for the number one quarterback in this class. I think they lost the game, but he didn't turn the ball over. And that is one thing that's been key for him this season. It's a question that we had about him coming into the season. I think from a quarterback standpoint, if you're not the reason that you win, you can't be the reason that you lose. And I think that his ability to play solid that game, all things considered, did nothing to hurt him in the conversation to be the number one quarterback in the class.
I'm fascinated to see how this quarterback class really unravels as we get closer to the pre-draft process in February, March, and April, and really the meat and potatoes of the month of the pre-draft leading up to everything. So let's see how Corral finishes up this year. His next notable game really isn't until November 6th. He should beat up on Liberty pretty good as far as their defense, but just the showdown, quote-unquote, between him and Malik Willis is something that everybody's going to have their eyes on, too. So looking forward to that one. But let's go ahead and go to our last game, which was Cincinnati and Notre Dame. I think this was one of the more entertaining games of the weekend. Cincinnati gets the victory 24-13. Probably the biggest win in program history. It was their first road win in program history. I think they were like 0-23 previously against top 10 teams on the road. So this was a big win for them. I thought Desmond Ridder was okay for the most part. He had a couple big time throws in this one, but it wasn't one that I think really helped his stock a whole bunch. I just thought he was consistent for the most part. You saw him use his legs quite a bit too. Majay Sanders was my biggest takeaway from this one, though. I really enjoyed what he was able to do. So, Andre, I'm going to come back to you on this one. What was your biggest takeaway from the Cincy and Notre Dame game?
I thought that Desmond Ridder played solid. I don't think he did anything to hurt his stock as far as being in the top five out of the quarterbacks in this class. I'm eager to see if Kyron Williams, a player currently in our top 100, can improve. He can be an every down back at the next level, man. I mean, so that's something I'll be keeping an eye on going forward.
He's a physical dude, man. That's what I love about Kyron Williams. When he steps up in pass pro, he's probably one of the better pass protection running backs in the country that I have seen anyway. So, yeah, I'm with you. He runs hard, too. I like him a lot. Brentley, what about you? What was your biggest takeaway from this one?
My biggest takeaway is Notre Dame needs a quarterback, and they need one bad. I mean, it was not good if you're a Notre Dame fan. I think Jack Cohen got benched. The other freshman, Buckner, he was okay. He got replaced too. I mean, it was a mess. I mean, honestly, for Notre Dame passing. And I thought Desmond Ridder, he played good. You know, 19-32, almost 300 yards passing, two touchdowns. You know, Jordan, as you mentioned, he made some tough throws, some throws on third down. I thought he really needed to hit. He did. But then he had some egregious misses. You know, that's kind of to me where I struggle with him is he'll have a really good throw and then just a miss that you ask yourself, what are you even looking at? And so I overall it was a good game from him, but I don't think he did anything to necessarily help his stock. To me, it was Cincinnati's defense, which was phenomenal. And again, they were playing an offense, which outside of Michael Mayer and Kyron Williams, I mean, it's really, really struggling right now. But you saw Majay Sanders be disruptive. You saw Maude Garner get a pick. Those are two guys who most likely will be first-round picks in the NFL draft. So it was a good showing for them. But overall, you know, not too much to write home about in this game. I think the best prospect on the field is this sophomore tight end, Michael Mayer. I mean, I think he's that good. He was outstanding. Again, 8 receptions, 93 yards. He runs routes like he's a receiver, and he's like 250 pounds. 260 pounds. He's phenomenal. So he'll be another name we'll be talking about all next year. But overall, good game. And Cincinnati at this point in time has a chance to make the playoff.
It's smooth selling for them through the rest of the AAC. I'm looking at their schedule now. So it's Temple, UCF, Navy, Tulane, Tulsa, USF, SMU, and East Carolina. That's the rest of their schedule. So it should be smooth sailing for them. As long as they stay focused and take care of business, they can set themselves up really well for a strong chance at the college football playoff. I think that's something to really monitor as we go on through the backstretch of this year. They have a really good team, though. I think the defense is really good. They have a corner that I like, opposite of Amaya Gardner. He'll probably be a mid-round guy, Kobe Bryant. I think he stood out in this game pretty well, too. He's been consistent throughout his career, too. So a name to definitely keep an eye on, Kobe Bryant. He has a name that you definitely will remember. It's not hard to forget that at all. So keep an eye on that name. But I want to go ahead and transition to the NFL now. And week four definitely was very interesting, to say the least. And Dre, I want to give you a standing ovation just because you were 110% correct about this. So the Vikings play the Cleveland Browns this weekend. Baker Mayfield was awful. He was bad in this one. He was really, really bad. But this raised the question about what the Browns should do in the future. And that's all I was thinking throughout this game, just because I don't know if you can pay Baker what he's going to command. He's going to want that $40 million. He's going to want that same price tag. He's going to have the same price tag as Josh Allen, Dak Prescott, some of these other dudes that we have seen get paid. I'm just not comfortable giving Baker Mayfield that. And I know it may be a snapshot judgment of what I saw last week, but he's just been really inconsistent throughout his career. He had a big rookie year, a little bit of a sophomore slump. He was okay last year, but he's off to a slow start again this year. And I'm not sure if you guys seen how many times he missed Odell Beckham. He was wide open on a touchdown and he just completely missed him. And he was really, really bad in this game. So that raises the question of what the Browns are going to do moving forward. Now, they're obviously going to ride it out with Baker this year. There's no question about that. But I think after this year and into the future, they have a serious question to ask themselves if they want to find, you know, a Teddy Bridgewater type of guy that they think can keep this roster intact over the long term, or do you end up paying Baker? That's the big question. But also, do you trade for Deshaun Watson? That's another possibility that could be out there for them too. So that's just something my mind was swimming just watching him this weekend, but he was bad. He was real bad in this one. But that was my biggest takeaway from week four. What about you, Brentley?
I just want to follow up there. I mean, like, okay, if you are Baker and your Baker's agent, do you have the balls, honestly, to go to Andrew Berry and say, hey, pay me like I'm Josh Allen's value? Like, how can you do that? I mean, like, I get it. Like, the latest quarterback always has to set the market and eclipse the last guy. But how can you, in the right mind, if you're Baker and Baker's camp, even begin to suggest that you are worth what Josh Allen or even Lamar Jackson is going to get? Like, that is, to me, insanity. And so if I'm the Browns, the only option, in my opinion, might be the franchise tag and kind of do them how Washington did Kirk Cousins, because it is the issue where I definitely don't want to pay, you know, Baker $45 million a year or whatever the heck Josh Allen's getting. I also think it might be a little tough to replace Baker, because as we've seen, this ain't going to be a good quarterback class for this year. Who knows what's really going to be available in the open market? I don't know. I think it's going to be, I think that storyline, that dilemma, is going to be one of the most fascinating offseason things to watch, just because, like, I certainly wouldn't feel comfortable paying Baker top dollar. I mean, I just wouldn't. But I also recognize, hey, my team's winning. You know, for what we ask him to do, he's okay. Like, it might be tough. And Cleveland has a win now roster. I'd hate to get rid of Baker and then, you know, find myself having to start a rookie or a player who may not be as good as Baker. So it's going to be fascinating to see what happens there. But I'll go back to one of my NFL takeaways. And it's, to me, it's the rookie quarterbacks are really just focusing on Justin Fields for a minute. I know his stat line isn't necessarily something to write home about. 11 of 17, 209 yards and a pick, but if you sat there and watched that game, to me, I thought he was really, really impressive. I mean, he kept the Bears offense on schedule, made some outstanding throws to the far hash of the field. He was sideline throws. He was, to me, super accurate. And for me, it was also hit the threat of him using carrying the ball with his legs and keeping the ball on zone options and so did zone reads really helped spark that running game, which is something I talked about with the staff. But you saw David Montgomery go over 106 yards and two touchdowns. And I think a lot of that is because it's the threat of Justin Fields keeping the ball, which is keeping another defender and spying Fields, and it's allowing more room for Montgomery. So I think just having Fields in the offense, in the lineup, helps the offense as a whole. And if I'm Matt Nagy, I just don't understand how you can even consider going back to Dalton, which in today he's even said on record, if Dalton's healthy, he's a starter. Fields is number two. I thought the offense looked the best by far that it's had in a while. You know, even since going back to last year when they got hot towards the end of the year and Bill Lazor started calling plays again. I was really impressed with Justin Fields, and to me, I see no way that I could take him off the field.
Yeah, I don't. Man, listen, if Nagy goes back to Andy Dalton after Justin Fields has shown what he's shown, they're gonna run that dude out of town quickly. Just because you can't do that, man. Like, he's
deservedly so.
Just let him go ahead and do it. Just ride it out. Whatever happens, happens. You just got to ride it out at this point. But, Dre, as always, I'm interested in getting your take on this Baker dilemma. And then what was your biggest takeaway from week four of the NFL action?
I think the horse is dead as far as the things I've said about Baker, man. I mean, at this point, I think Baker is a game manager, man. I mean, and if you can't be effective consistently, when you have probably the best running attack in the league, you got weapons like Jarvis Landry, Odell, you got the best offensive line in the league, if not a top three line. I mean, shucks, man. I mean, everything is set up around you. You got great tight ends in Hooper and David Njoku. If you can't have consistent success surrounded by that, because Cleveland has a top three roster from top to bottom in the league, man. I mean, so I just don't know. I mean, but I don't think that the Baker is going to be the long-term answer. I think I've said that for 2 years now. But as far as takeaways from the league, man, I mean, there's so many young players who bought out, man. So many guys that caught my attention this past Sunday, man. You think of Trayvon Diggs, man, who has five picks in four games and playing exceptionally well. You think of Byron Murphy, man, who's second in the league in picks, man. He's got four with two touchdowns, and he should have five. I mean, he's having a coming out party. You think of Mac Jones, man, who isn't necessarily a great athlete and won't wow you with anything physically, man. I mean, but shucks, like, you'd be hard pressed to not say if you were to do a redraft from the past year, man, he wouldn't be in the top two or three. No, I mean, and then you think of Jalen Hurts, man. I mean, like, we talk so much about him not necessarily being the most accurate guy and all these things, but all he does is move the chains, man. Like, he's a chain mover. If he does it with his legs, if he does it with his arm, I think we didn't give him enough credit for being the competitor that he is, man. He went to Alabama, had to compete there, man, in a tough situation, you know, as well as Oklahoma too, man. I mean, so, and everywhere he's been, man, I mean, he's just come out on top. But my biggest NFL takeaway, man, I know I wrote about this earlier, man, but I think the Arizona Cardinals are for real, man. Kyler Murray is the front runner for the MVP. I think the thing that surprised me most in Sunday's win was their ability to run the football, man. Chase Edmond had 12 carries for 120 yards. That was easily his best game or top 3 to 5 game for him as a Cardinal. The other thing that's surprising about the Cardinals is how well they're playing on defense, man. And Vance Joseph is doing a great job. And you can write this in ink, man. But Byron Murphy's going to the Pro Bowl this year. You can write that down. He's killing.
That secondary is playing really, really well. And I talked about it a couple of weeks ago after I watched them when they played the Vikings. Buda Baker is obviously special. But Thompson, the other safety opposite him, is really good. He was a really good find for them, too.
Yeah.
I think they need one more piece in that secondary. I think they probably need one more slot guy just because I like what they're doing on the perimeter there. But that defense, man, all those freaks and athletes that they have drafted is really starting to come together. J.J. Watt has helped them a whole bunch along the interior, too. Isaiah Simmons, the light is starting to turn on for him. Zaven Collins has been great in the middle. He's still trying to figure out some things as far as defending the run and then seeing and triggering and flying downhill to finish tackles. But pass coverage, we already knew he had that already walking through the door. So I really like what Steve Keim has put together. And I know we all have given Keim hell throughout his career as far as not having a plan. But it seems everything is starting to come together for sure. Did you guys have anything else that you want to add before we get out of here?
No.
All right, that is it for our show, our Tuesday show. Thanks, as always, for Jordan Reed, Trey Harris, Brentley Wiseman. We are the Read Option Podcast. Thank you guys, as always, for listening. Make sure to subscribe, leave a 5-star review, and as always, follow the Draft Network on every social media platform. We have things coming out every week. Brentley just released his latest mock draft, so be sure to check that out. Dre has written plenty of articles this week, as well as myself. Make sure you guys go check out all of that at thedraftnetwork.com. We will be back on Friday to talk about week 6 of the college football action. There is plenty of intriguing matchups that we will go through. We'll highlight our red dot prospects as well. Thank you guys for listening, and see you on Friday.